I assume that mother and father are cognizant of all this to some degree. In my view, this whole bang up, the war, is simply an excuse to seek out and extract even larger sums of money from the tax base. The whole conflagration merely serves to increase trade, which serves to increase tax revenues, which results in more war. Fortunately for me, the family doesn't seem too keen on auditing my activities. The fact that my relatives' economic interests are currently seen to overlap with my own is a kind of happy accident, perhaps of the sort depicted in children's cinema or in certain of the ancient sequentially illustrated pamphlets collected by my father. In reality, my family enlightened self-interest drives a free exchange of goods and services, a marketplace that in turn benefits the entire community. My own present activities, in spite of the myopic moral objections offered by my sister, contribute to this aggregate effect. Taxes, and thus war, are merely inevitable. Yes, I've done some reading on the topic, I readily admit, but the ideas I've argued with father stand on their own, heedless of any pseudo-intellectual hawing. I dare say that they are self-evident. If only I could get him to understand, even in wartime, altruism is beside the point. The kid in the car doesn't realize I'm only in for the money. He digs his fingernails into the palm of my hand, obviously frightened by the noises on the street. We round a corner and a rather large building comes apart right in front of us. He buries his face into my coat just as we're pelted with a boiling shock wave of dust. For some reason, he looks to me for protection. Of course, this toddler's intellect is incapable of assessing the true complexity of our situation. He's not yet up to the task of cynical apprehension, but perhaps in the end, he's right to place his faith in me. It is unquestionably within the realm of my interest to ensure that he survives these trips to the surface. The profit motive is clear. It is right there in my contract. I pause to reflect on the brilliant symmetry of our arrangement, and it dazzles me all over again. I cannot help but marvel as I trace its subtle mechanism. William survives, I profit. I strive to gather my thoughts. The dizzying effect persists. Even as large sheets of smart glass are disintegrating everywhere around us. A rapture similar to my own seems to have overtaken William. I am enthralled as he adopts a distant, distracted gaze, his jaw falling slack, almost against his shirt. He is serene now in his repose, more contented than either of us have any right to be, given the circumstances. I believe that my hand, which he continues to grip quite tightly, is starting to bleed onto my trousers. Torn from my reverie, I reply with a gentle squeeze, communicating to William that we are going to be all right. I guide his chair across the street, away from the perambulating dust cloud that by now has puffed up its chest to encompass half of the block. If the trailing wisps of this mess are not to gum up the work of William's chair, we'll need to find our way into a shop or an office or a foyer rather quickly. Adults are hurling themselves to and fro, generally kicking up more commotion than is warranted by the simple demolition of a midtown office building. I rein in young Master William and tether him to a banister, then set off to fetch an adult. In short order, I'm breaststroking through a sea of white lab coats. It is clear to me now that we've ended up in some sort of medical clinic. It only takes a moment to evaluate the new surroundings, and I remain lucid enough not to dust myself off before approaching one of the nurses. That would be tantamount to chucking one of my tools into the trash. There's just no end to it. I hear one of the doctor's remarks circumnavigating the perimeter of a nearby cubicle. His voice is filled with workaday resignation. I rotate my body to face him so that I might appraise him visually. Half a second passes. His profile fits, so I launch myself purposefully in his direction. I'm going to try to smear handprints onto his coat before he has a chance to form a dispassionate impression of me. Once I've struck, he'll be forced to take in my appearance to consider my circumstances. The ploy is guaranteed to work, given his type.